do you mean by pleasant?
It's a relative term. But at least you're not half dead from heat exhaustion and lack of food and water. And at least you get to keep your weapons this time. Let's just hope you get a chance to use them.
Wouldn't it be better to say that we don't get a chance to use them? If us just being here stops any more sabotage, then the well and refinery can open, the workers get their jack, the barons get their power, and everyone's happy.
In a perfect world, maybe. But you're no fool, Reinkotter. You know it won't be that way. Whoever is behind this will crawl out of their little hole again, regardless of if you're there or not. Maybe even because, if they feel it's a challenge. So what happens then?
We won't know for sure until we actually get out there.
Which will be when?
Today. That's why you're here, after all. Crow allowed a smile to crack his impassive, leathery features. Under the shadow cast by the brim of his hat, his eyes glittered.
Are you ready to go?
As ready as we'll ever be. Right, Doc? Doc winced slightly as he thought of his sore back.
I think it is safe to say that, my dear boy.
As the Sec Force went about its daily tasks, the rest of the companions joined Ryan, Doc, and Crow in the tent. And when they were ready, they walked out to the paddock, where McVee was waiting for them.
Hey, the big day, right? You're on second watch, and your route will be through the camp rather than the work sites. My all reckoned it will be better for you to check that out tonight, as that's when most of the sabotage has occurred anyway. He figures it's better for you to get a night view from the start. Besides which, if you're seen today, it might stir some action.
Seems a reasonable course of action. So when do we head off?
About 2 hours, so I guess you've got plenty of time to get your blasters stripped and ready.
So who's giving us the lowdown on the camp as we patrol?
I am. I know all of these peoples. I traveled a lot before coming to work for Baron Silas, and they all know of me. I can fill you in on any background you need.
And report back on us to the Baron, right?
I'd be a fool to deny that.
Ryan nodded and led his people away from the paddock and back to the tent they had made their base in the Sec camp. Crow stayed with McVee, knowing that it was right to give them space. Once they were in the tent, they began to clean and check their blasters, an easy task, since JB always insisted on constant blaster maintenance, which made each clean and check an almost perfunctory matter.
You think we can trust Crow?
Everything we say and do will go back to the Baron, but other than that, I think he'll be straight with us. Hell, he has been so far. He didn't have to tell us he would report it all back. Jack looked up as he checked his .357 Magnum Colt Python, chambering around.
Open, man. No bullshit.
Yeah, I don't get a bad feeling about him. He's just got his job to do and a line to walk. Same as all of us to different degrees, right?
They finished checking their weapons, and JB went through his stock of Grens and Plasecs.
We'll need these in the camp. Far too closed in to risk it. More likely to chill ourselves than anyone else. But maybe later, when we get to the work sites.
Ryan checked his wrist chron. Time to go. Let's stay hard out there, and triple red for everything. They mounted their horses and rode from the Sec camp across the short distance to the outskirts of the workers' camp, passing the incoming patrol on the way. The patrol had nothing to report, apart from the usual complaints and insults among the different Ville tribes. There had been no fighting and no sign of any real trouble.
Looks like you may get broken in easy, which will at least give you a chance to learn about these people before you have to start chilling them.
None of the companions were sure if the deadpan man was joking, and refrained from comment. The first nest of huts and tents belonged to the people of Hague, whose baron was John the Gaunt. A severe name for a severe baron, and that was reflected in the dour and downbeat appearance of their encampment. The material that comprised the tents was of dull stained colors, and the women and children were quiet, going about their chores and play with a deadened demeanor, as though just going through the motions. They hardly looked up as the patrol passed through.
Can't see these being much trouble. What are the men like?
Like this. They work hard and keep themselves to themselves. Hague's not a Richville, and they've had to work their land hard and drive hard bargains based on work rather than jack. They like to keep their energy for work, because that's all they had to keep them alive for a long time. The road and the well will bring them more than they could ever dream, but John the Gaunt won't let them get soft on it. I'd figure they were part of some old religion before Skydark, and that harshness has stayed with them. They're the last ones I bet on to be sabotaging the works. One thing, though, don't be fooled by how quiet and peaceful they seem. You cross these people, and they're the hardest fighters you'll ever come across. Even the bastards from Mandrake avoid them, and they'll fight anyone.
As Crow finished, a woman holding a roughly made broom walked toward them, unflinching of the horses as they twitched at her approach.
Good day to you.
She immediately noticed hands ready to unholster blasters.
There's no need for that. I have no quarrel with you. I merely wish to ask a question.
Well, that's fine. Ask your question, my friend.
She nodded at Crow.
I know of you. You are from the Baron Silas. I would be thinking that these are outsider mercies brought in to stop the sabotage.
When Crow answered her with a nod, she continued, now addressing the companions.
Do you be thinking that you can stop an entire army? For that is what this can't be. I have no love for any others, and they not for me. But if they wish to cause war, then are you enough?
I don't know. It depends on who's causing the trouble.
Are you so naive that you do not realize that all cause trouble for all? We fight each other, because it is not right for us all to be so close.
But maybe the sabotage isn't from you all. Maybe your fights only give cover to those who want to stop the well.
The woman said nothing at first, but assessed the one-eyed man shrewdly.
You just might be capable.
She then turned and returned to her hut, sweeping as though they were no longer there. The patrol moved on, and when they had reached the obvious demarcation point between one villain and another, Dean turned to Crow.
Are they all that weird?
Crow grinned wryly.
Start with the strangest, and everything else is easy to take in. You'll see, son. You'll see.
The lines marking the boundaries between the different groups within the camp were clear. Within a few yards of the spot where they had stopped to speak with a woman, they turned a corner and were suddenly somewhere very different. The huts, shacks, and tents were constructed in a different manner, seeming to veer over, almost ready to collapse. It was obvious that little effort had gone into their construction, although they were garishly decorated in paints and dyed fabrics in a collision of orange, white, and green. The women talked, the area was dirty, and the children ran riot. There had been some indication of this in the distant noise as they had rode through the quiet of the Hague sector, but nothing could have prepared them for the sudden contrast. The children whirled in and out of the horses' hooves, disturbing the animals and causing all the companions to tighten their grips on the manes. The women ignored their children and carried on conversing in loud voices, not caring what was occurring, and seeming not to notice the riders among them.
Bedlam.
This part of the camp smelled strongly of distilled spirit, and there were signs of smoke from some of the huts that suggested the inhabitants were either brewing spirit or else had forgotten to extinguish fires and were about to lose their homes. Not that it seemed that they cared.
So who are these?
This, my friend, is the Mandrake sector. Putting these people next to those from Hague wasn't the best piece of foresight anyone ever had. To say they loathe each other would be an understatement.
So this is a source of trouble?
Baron Sylvain is a rich man, and he wants to be richer. He sunk a lot of jack into this, and he won't be too keen on it going west because of some squabbling. These are fierce, short-tempered people. They fear their Baron more than anyone else.
Enough to stick to his word when they're this far away?
Brian looked at the groups of women who were eyeing them suspiciously, the children who were throwing stones at one another, and at the horses' forelocks when they thought no one was looking, and at the few older men who lurked in the doorways of the huts, eyeing the patrol.
If you'd ever met Baron Sylvain, you wouldn't be asking that question. Take it from me, no one would want to cross him. That's not to say that some, fired up by spirits, won't.
And they're the ones to watch out for.
By now, J.B. had ridden up to join them and had overheard the conversation.
Yeah, but how do you tell? Don't be fooled by the way they look, Ryan. Take a look at some of the blasters, then sniff the air.
Ryan frowned and tried to get a look at the blasters carried by the women without being spotted. The armorer was right. Although the women seemed unkempt and their clothes were colorful, tight-fitting, and sluttish, the hand blasters that all of them seemed to pack were, as far as he could tell from what was visible, highly polished. If they kept the visible part of the blaster in that good a condition, then chances were that the mechanisms were also well maintained. And the air? The one-eyed man was about to comment to JB that he could smell the chemical aroma of plastics being broken down and reconstituted, and possibly homemade explosives, too, when a sudden flurry of violent activity distracted him. A fight had broken out among one group of women. Ryan hadn't heard the argument that led to it, but Christy and Mildred had. Two women were arguing about an old man who lurked in the doorway of one of the huts, did nothing to stop the argument. In fact, he seemed to revel in the sudden chaos he had caused.
I tell you, he wouldn't tour with you if you was the last woman on the face of the world, which you'd have to be to get any attention from a man.
The older woman, who was about 100...